All right, welcome in everyone to another deep dive. This time we're digging into a Florida landlord-tenant law case, Palm Beach, Florida Hotel v. Nantucket Enterprises.
Ah.
And we've got, you know, a stack of court documents and all sorts of materials to go through. So hopefully we can pull out the really key points for you today. You know, this case, I think it sheds light on, you know, the whole landlord-tenant relationship in Florida and really underscores, you know, why you absolutely need to follow the legal process, you know, to resolve these kinds of disputes.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it's not just about who won or lost in this particular case. It really does highlight like some really basic but really important property law principles in Florida.
Uh-huh.
And yeah, like you said, emphasizes that the legal system is, you know, the final word, like the ultimate decision maker in these kinds of situations.
Okay, so let me set the scene for you here. You know, imagine Nantucket Enterprises, they're the tenant in this case, and they lease this huge space, over 20,000 square feet in an Embassy Suites hotel in Palm Beach, no less.
Oh.
Right, we're talking a restaurant, a lounge, a ballroom, even a gazebo. I mean,
yeah.
Prime real estate for a business.
Yeah, totally. I mean, think about it. To have your business located inside like a well-known hotel in Palm Beach, that's like instant visibility, you know, built-in customer mm-hmm. base. I mean, that's a really valuable asset.
For sure. But here's where things start to go south. Nantucket, they began renovating the restaurant. Okay, sounds good so far, right? Like spruce things up, make it nice. But here's the big misstep. They didn't get the proper permits from the city before they started all this work.
Oh, boy. Yeah, that's never a good idea. I mean, you know, working without the necessary permits, it can open up this whole can of worms, legally and operationally. And I mean, in this case, it really shows you exactly how that can backfire.
Right. And what the landlord did next, that's what really gets the ball rolling in this whole legal battle. So same day the city shuts down the restaurant, boom, the hotel takes action, like, immediately. Yeah, they changed the locks, not just on the restaurant, but the kitchen, even Nantucket's offices.
Oh, yeah.
Then they go ahead, terminate the lease, and to top it all off, they have the police escort Nantucket employees off the property.
Oh, man. Not exactly a friendly way to handle
yeah.
things.
Yeah, no, understatement.
Yeah.
So, obviously, Nantucket's business, I mean, it's disrupted, like, big time. And you know, I think what's so interesting here is the landlord's approach. I mean, it seems like they were just trying to sidestep the whole legal system, just like take care of it themselves. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I see what you're saying. I mean, you can kind of understand the frustration. You've got a tenant doing unpermitted work, causing you problems. But the thing is, in Florida, the law is really strict about this. Landlords, they can't just, you know, take back possession without going through the courts. It's just not allowed.
Right. So that brings us to the big legal question here. Was this lockout, you know, changing the locks and all that, was it a wrongful eviction? You know, some people might be thinking, well, the tenant messed up, no permits, probably something in the lease about defaulting. So why all the fuss about changing the locks, right?
Right, right. And that's where Florida law really comes into play. And specifically, Florida Statute 83.8052, it spells it out pretty clearly. It basically says that even if you have a clause in your lease, you know, the kind that says the landlord can, like, re-enter and take the property back if the tenant messes up, breaches the lease.
Yeah.
It's called self-help, right? Those clauses, they're not enforceable in Florida. Landlords, they have to go to court, get an official eviction order if they want to get possession back. They can't just lock you out, end of story.
So let's break this down a little more, this whole self-help idea. The landlord in this case, they seem to argue, you know, hey, we were just evicting them from the restaurant part, but the court, they didn't buy that, did they?
No, they didn't. And the reason is the court looked at it and said, look, Nantucket, they leased over 20,000 square feet and it was all one big commercial space, all connected. So when the landlord locked up the restaurant, the kitchen, the offices, that basically meant Nantucket couldn't use anything, not the lounge, the ballroom, not even the gazebo. You know, it's like, imagine you lease a whole office building. Even if one office is unusable, the landlord can't just lock you out of the whole building without a court order. It doesn't work that way.
Yeah.
The tenant has the right to use everything they're leasing.
And the court actually made a really clear statement about this. It was something like, you know, the law specifically takes away the landlord's right to possession unless they follow the proper legal procedures. Do you remember the exact quote?
Yeah, I do. It was, the amendment to Section 83.05 abrogates a landlord's right to possession unless they file an action under Section 83.20. And I think what's really important to understand is this process, this legal process for eviction, That's the only way a landlord can legally get the property back if a tenant breaches the lease. Any clause in a lease that tries to get around that, it's just not valid in Florida.
So the bottom line is, the court said this was a wrongful eviction. And initially, the trial court awarded Mantucket a whole lot of money, like $8.8 million for the wrongful eviction itself, plus another $2 million for something called conversion. So what's conversion in this context, and why did the appellate court end up overturning that part of the award?
Okay, so conversion, legally speaking, it basically means you're treating someone else's personal property like it's yours. You know, doing things with it that the actual owner wouldn't be okay with. So in this case, Nantucket argued that when the landlord locked them out, it wasn't just about the space. It was about their stuff that was inside, you know, all of their things, like restaurant equipment, furniture, inventory, basically all their business assets.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense. So locked out, can't get to your stuff. That's kind of like the landlord taking over, right?
Exactly. But the $2 million award, that got reversed. And it all comes down to the difference between real property, that's the space itself, and personal property, the stuff inside. And proving conversion, you need very specific proof. So the wrongful eviction, that was about the right to be in the space, the real estate. But conversion, that's about the tenant's belongings, the physical stuff.
Mm.
And the appellate court said, look, Nantucket didn't provide enough detail.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they didn't list out each piece of equipment, the exact inventory, you know, all the specifics. They needed to prove exactly what was missing and how much it was worth at the time of the lockout.
So just saying, hey, we lost $2 million worth of stuff, that's not enough for the court.
Nope, not even close. You need receipts, you need proof. It's like if someone steals your car, you can't just say, my car's gone. You have to tell them what kind of car, what year, how much it was worth. Same idea here. You have to prove it was taken and how much you lost because of it. Otherwise, the conversion claim won't hold up.
Gotcha. So wrongful eviction, that's about the right to be in the property, the real estate. Conversion, that's about the stuff inside, and you need really detailed proof for that. Super important distinction. Okay, so last piece of this puzzle. This case also dealt with prejudgment interest. The trial court awarded Nantucket that $8.8 million for the wrongful eviction, plus interest on that money, going all the way back to when the eviction happened. The landlord, obviously, they weren't happy about that, but the appellate court agreed with the trial court. So help me understand this. Why did Nantucket get all that interest on top of the $8.8 million?
Okay, so here's why. The court said that when the damages are what they call fixed and pecuniary, meaning the financial laws is clear, you can calculate it pretty accurately, and it happened on a specific date, then awarding prejudgment interest isn't optional. It's mandatory under Florida law. So in this case, the wrongful eviction happened on a specific date, and the damages, that $8.8 million, that was a clear economic loss. So Nantucket was legally entitled to interest on that money from the date of the eviction until the final judgment.
So it's not just about getting paid for what you lost right then. It's also about, like, the lost time, you know, the fact that you couldn't use that money while the case was going on.
Exactly. The law recognizes that Nantucket didn't have access to that $8.8 million from the moment they were wrongfully evicted. So that prejudgment interest, it helps to make up for that lost time, the lost opportunity to use that money. But like I said, it has to be a clear, calculable loss tied to a specific date. If the losses are vague, or it's hard to say exactly when they happened, the rules about prejudgment interest, they might be different. But in this case, that $8.8 million, it was a clear-cut loss.
Okay, so let's sum this all up, make sure we hit the key points from our deep dive into this case. So number one, super important for Florida, landlords cannot do self-help evictions. They can't just change the locks no matter what the lease says. The law is super clear. Go to court, get an eviction order. Even something like locking a gazebo, if it stops the tenant from using the whole property, that could be a wrongful eviction. The legal process, that's the way to go.
Yeah, can't emphasize that enough. It doesn't matter what's in the lease. You have to follow the legal process. A tenant, they have the right to use the whole property. And if a landlord interferes with that without a court order, they're risking a wrongful eviction lawsuit.
Right. Okay, number two. Always remember the difference between real property and personal property. When you're talking about a tenant stuff, that's personal property. And if you're claiming the landlord took it, that's a conversion claim. But you have to prove it, like with the detailed lists, receipts, values, all of that. Remember that $2 million conversion award? That got tossed because they didn't have enough proof.
Absolutely. Documentation is key. If you can't show exactly what was lost and how much it was worth, it's very hard to win a conversion case.
And finally, that prejudgment interest, it's a big deal. If the damages are fixed, you know, a specific amount and they happen on a specific date, the court has to award interest on that money. So in this case, that $8.8 million, that started earning interest from the day of the eviction.
Right. And that just shows how important it is to be able to prove your losses, to show exactly how much money you lost because of the landlord's actions.
So what we learned from Palm Beach Flora Hotel v. Nantucket Enterprises is this. Leases are important, but the law is the ultimate rule. The courts, they're the ones who decide, ultimately. And this case really makes you think about the power dynamics between landlords and tenants and how the law tries to make sure everything is fair and that everyone follows the rules.
For sure. It shows that even if a tenant breaks the lease, the landlord can't just do whatever they want. They have to follow the law.
And this case, it raises a lot of other questions, you know, like, what else could be considered a wrongful eviction, even if it's not a complete lockout? And what are the best ways for tenants to document their personal property, just in case they need to make a conversion claim? I mean, there's a lot to think about here.
Yeah, definitely. This case, it really opens up a whole conversation about property law and all the intricacies involved.
Well, that's all the time we have for this deep dive. Hopefully, we've given you some good insights into this Florida case and what it means for landlords and tenants.
Thanks for having me. It was a great discussion.
Thanks for joining us, everyone. We'll see you next time.